Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, WTTW is airing a big Memorial Day special this weekend. It's a documentary that looks at Navy training operations in this area during World War II. It's called Heroes on Deck, World War II on Lake Michigan. Essentially, to prepare the Navy and sailors for a fight in the Pacific, the Navy used Lake Michigan as a training ground for dangerous water landings and maneuvers. The result is that there are several planes at the bottom of Lake Michigan. Longtime Chicago producers John Davies and Brian Callies are behind the documentary, and they join me tonight. John, Brian, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having us on your show.
Where'd this idea come from? Because this is something that a lot of Chicagoans probably who are listening to WGN Radio right now are like, I know this. But a lot probably didn't. There's a lot of planes at the bottom of Lake Michigan.
Well, it starts with Pearl Harbor. And Pearl Harbor happened, and our carriers survived Pearl Harbor. The battleships didn't. And they couldn't pull the carriers out of the war to train guys. So they came up with this idea. And they also, by the way, were worried about training them along the coastlines, the Atlantic and the Pacific, because of predatory enemy submarines.
And stuff like that, right?
So this guy named Admiral Whitehead championed this idea to put two naval aircraft carriers in the middle of Lake Michigan. Now, they couldn't get them up the St. Lawrence Seaway, so then they decided, well, let's build some. And then building became too complicated, so then they took two old side-wheel passenger steamers. These were boats that you could tour the Great Lakes on as a passenger for $59, 7 days. Great deal. And they stripped the top deck off and literally just put a flat top on. And they trained 15,000 pilots between 1942 and the end of the war. Eight takeoff and landings, and once you had successfully done that – and by the way, these planes flew out from Glenview.
Okay.
And they had to find the carriers in the middle of the lake. No easy task. And then land and take off. And once they completed that, fourth day, they were shipped to Glendale, California. And a week or two later, they were out fighting the Japanese.
It's amazing to me to think about that because, you know, I've always heard and there's some markers and if you go along Sheridan Road and things like that. But I wasn't very familiar with the story. Brian, how did you get involved in this?
Well, John and I have been working together for a number of years now, 7, 8 years, and we've done a number of documentaries. You know, Harvey Moshman, our third producer on this, John and he worked together. And then Harvey had started shooting these planes coming up beginning in 2009. And they don't pull these things up every week, every month. I mean, it takes a lot to pull these things up. And when he got enough together, contacted John and said, I think we can retell this story.
Because just truth be told, I had made this film for TTW back in 1988 under the title Top Guns of 43 because Tom Cruise's film Top Guns was on. But I had no money to make it. I had very few resources, not really great footage, didn't have much of the underwater stuff. But Harvey, our partner, the other executive producer, he's a diver, a very good diver. So he talked me into remaking it. And I realized that now we could use CG. We had a real budget because we found a guy here in town. His name is Captain David Truitt. And he's the chairman of the Chicago Marine Historical Society. And he knew this story like the back of his hand. And he wrote us a check for the whole budget.
Wow.
With very few questions
asked.
Yeah,
that's great.
And so we finally had the resources. Anything Brian and I wanted to order, we could order. So we raided the National Archives, found some really cool stuff.
Beautiful, like 16-millimeter color footage of the actual operation on the Wolverine.
Of the planes crashing?
Yeah, planes crashing.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. I mean, these were maneuvers. They were training grounds. So there had to have been accidents and things that didn't go right. I mean, that's what training is. And that's why there's so many of these planes that are wrecked at the bottom of the lake.
It's the hardest thing to do. An aviator will say this. One of the hardest things to do is to land and take off from an aircraft carrier. And keep in mind, these were training carriers. These were not the full-size Essex-class carriers.
Tougher, right.
They're 800 feet long. They're 86 feet tall. These were 550 feet long and 26 feet tall.
So they're
closer to the waves.
Right.
It's a shorter deck. And so if they can land on these, they can land on anything. So, yes, 15,000 times 8, about 100 plus planes went into the water.
Eight landings and takeoffs.
Yeah, eight landings and takeoffs.
That's what you need to qualify.
And then out of this, guys, I mean, you know, almost as many people die in military training accidents as in actual combat. So if you think about this, 15,000 guys, 8 takeoffs and landings each, and only 8 guys perished, it's terrible anytime somebody loses their life.
Right.
But it's remarkable given the speed and volume.
8 pilots and also there's many crewmen because they were also training too. And so there were times when guys would walk into propellers. or ugh, there'd be some other terrible thing that happened.
Because there's no below decks on these carriers. So, guys, everything's on the deck. And sometimes these guys are, you know, come on this way. And it's deafening noise on the deck. And they'd walk into props. And a couple of other guys we heard, we don't know if this is 100% true, but we heard that a couple of guys drowned because they would sometimes swim in to, you know, party and go to the restaurants and stuff at night and have a tough time making it back.
Oh, man. It's amazing to me because, you know, there is a documented naval history with Lake Michigan and the area. I mean, obviously the Great Lakes Naval Base still is in existence on the right outside of Waukegan there. Mm-hmm. But this is something that, when you think about, is such a big part of the way that World War II played out. I mean, the idea of having this war in the Pacific and having to do everything on the water. And it doesn't seem to me to be the known story of the Navy in this area. And it seems like we would celebrate it much more than it is.
Well, here's the big deal. I mean, and Brian and I have talked about this. I mean, this would be a huge lifetime commitment. But somebody should do the documentary Chicago Goes to War, because it turns out Chicago is a pivotal player in World War II. Mm-hmm. Something like 45% of all the production of World War II took place here.
Interesting.
The whole South Side was one giant factory. Refrigerator companies became aircraft manufacturing companies.
Was that the same reason that they wanted to produce in the middle of the country so there couldn't be any surprise attacks?
It was about the work and labor force here. Yeah. And the materials and the trains. And this was a hub for rail and food production. And it was all kind of centered here in the Midwest. And so that's the other thing. We also discovered when we were making this film that the federal government shipped like the IRS records here and other things because they were worried about being bombed along the East Coast. So they shipped a lot of the federal offices and relocated them in Chicago.
You know, for this story, for you guys putting together this documentary, you know, what were the things that, I mean, you obviously had to go find the footage, which we talked a little bit about, but also the people that were involved in it. Is it becoming harder to find materials when it comes to something like World War II?
Well, the materials, as you can imagine, World War II has been almost exhausted in terms of stories. I mean, it has been thoroughly pored over. By the BBC for very good reasons. So when a story like this comes along that is such a major part, I mean, historians now agree that without this training exercise, we might not have won the war in the Pacific, or at very least, it would have gone on a heck of a lot longer.
But to find the guys
was a hard thing, because you are absolutely right. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we talked to a few pilots, Chuck Downey and Captain Grant Young, and they both passed away. Grant Young died before we got to finish the film. Chuck Downey saw the film. I think actually he was going on his way into a procedure and told us, "I saw the film. I'm going under the knife." He survived that, but then shortly thereafter he had passed away. But yeah, these guys, we're losing them.
And these were two Midwest-based guys. We shot them here. And it's just, I mean, it's World War II generation. They're vanishing every day. But Chuck Downey was in the original film, the Top Guns of 43 movie. So I'd known Chuck for years.
Right.
And he's just a great interview. When you see the film, Chuck still got all the energy. You know, unfortunately, he was 92. And his daughter texted us as we showed this film in London a month ago at the Royal Aeronautical Society, a real trip. And I got the text at JFK from Chuck Downey's daughter that he had passed.
You know, for this, I mean, obviously it's a very Chicago story, and it's going to air here. But you mentioned, you know, London and the BBC, and they've been exhaustive in trying to tell the story of World War II. This story as you just mentioned about whether or not we would have won the war in the Pacific, this does have international hooks. I mean, this is such a big deal, and so it's not a local story. It's an international one.
Well, the other thing that makes it not local, and I hope you guys get to see it soon, is Bill Curtis. You know, it was my voice doing the scratch track. You know what scratch track is, right? And I was saying, you know what? That's not too bad. Maybe we could get away with me doing the voiceover.
Yeah, right.
And Brian's like, no, John, no.
It's a production dream, at least for me, to have a project with Bill Curtis. And when we did the voiceover, you know, he was in Chicago and we were in Los Angeles. He gets on the box and we're all, who's here? John, Brian. It's Bill. And like we just little schoolgirls, you're like, oh my God, it's Bill.
It's in my living room, coming out of the phone in my living room.
He's the perfect voice. And his voice is great. He's a respected newsman. And he grew up in Pensacola.
Okay,
so he has a real connection with this, a big Navy town. His father was in the Navy for a very long time.
And Bill was a Marine.
Yeah.
which was part of the Navy back in World War II. And Bill and his son, many years ago, they were divers also. They went down to see one of the wrecks. You know, there's about 80-something still sitting
out there.
That's
what I was going to ask, yeah.
And we brought up about 40, not we, but this company that we've been working with. They've been bringing them up since the late 70s, I think. And they're displaying them in airports and museums all over the U.S. Like every time you go into Midway, you walk underneath a Dauntless dive bomber that was on the bottom of the lake a few years ago. Same thing when you go out to O'Hare. You pass a Hellcat, is it out there? Or
Wildcat
out of O'Hare. Again, on the bottom of the lake.
Wow.
And so there's some in Palm Springs, in Hawaii, in Michigan, at the
Kalamazoo
Air Zoo.
Is there a plan to bring all these 80 up? I mean, or is there a certain point where you're like, you can't get them anymore?
Here is the problem. So about 19 years ago, the Quagga mussels came into Lake Michigan. So before this, they were pulling up planes that were pristine. These are 200-plus feet down in some cases. They had air in the tires. The batteries were taking charges.
Fuel in the tanks.
They got there was one that was restored to flying condition, a Wildcat. It flew. Anyway, 19 years ago, the Quagga mussels come in. They start attaching themselves to all the metal structures. And now when they pull them up, they are completely encrusted. So they are falling apart. And the clock is really ticking. And the metallurgists and the experts on this say that they have probably less than 10 years before they are just mush.
Let me ask you guys as we wrap up here. As filmmakers, and you guys have done a lot of work in your careers, what did you learn from this one? I mean, what's the takeaway for you, John, for you, Brian, on Heroes on Deck?
Find an incredible funder like Captain Dave Truitt so you can really make a good film, because we're really proud of this film. We got a chance to make this film at the top of our craft, and we had all the resources we needed financially, and it's really nice when you make a documentary and you have that kind of support. But the other big takeaway is that, you know, these guys were 18 years old. They were young kids, man. They came off farms and stuff. They were driving tractors, and then, you know, 4 months later, they're fighting the Japanese, and they've got to find a carrier. And by the way, there's no computers. There's no tracking devices. This is all analog and mechanical stuff. And these planes aren't easy to fly. They have hundreds of power of horsepower. They got to get out there, find the enemy, attack the enemy, and then find their carrier again and land safely. And they're kids, you know, but they became men fast. That's why we called it Heroes. And the original title was Heroes in Training, but we couldn't clear that. So it went to Heroes on Deck, and Deck still works. But they really were heroes, these guys. And when you talk to them, they're super modest. They'd never call themselves that. This was a different generation than, you know, the me generation. They always talk team and about everybody's cooperation. But Chuck Downey was a real inspirational guy to us. I mean, we really loved Chuck. And Grant Young, you know, he sank the largest battleship in the Japanese Navy, the Yamato. He put the final fish into it. But telling us that story all these years later, he now realized there were 4,000 men that went to their death that day.
Wow.
And he's got quite a look on his face when he tells the story now. It was victory for him, but, you know, it's humanity,
it's
too.
War, right.
Yeah. So I hope you get to see it.
What about you, Brian? What's one thing that you'll never forget about this project?
Well, I think at least my approach to documentaries, I have to have a buy-in. I have to believe in it some way. And for this one, it was kind of easy. It's a love letter to Chicago. And my father was in the Navy. My grandfather was in the Navy. He actually taught the new technology radar at the time. Grandfather of mine was in the Navy. And so when you can also discover a story like this that is so big and sort of hiding in plain sight, you know that when we say Heroes on Deck is a story of how more than 100 World War II planes ended up on the bottom of Lake Michigan, almost everyone just goes, what? Tell me more. You can just see them. When you know you have that one little line and you get people hooked, you know you're onto something good. So.
Well, I'm hooked. Heroes on Deck, World War II on Lake Michigan. The producers, John Davies, Brian Callies, and Harvey Moshman, who's not here. Heroes on Deck, World War II on Lake Michigan, the documentary. The producers, John Davies and Brian Callies, along with Harvey Moshman. Guys, thanks for coming in. Appreciate
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the greatest of all time, the Chicago Bulls, the 96 Bulls, Jack Silverstein, sort of our official sports historian here on The Download. He's going to join us. Also, for those listening, the Heroes on Deck is going to play tonight. I think it's Sunday and Monday, all on Channel 11. So if you're listening right now, because I had a couple people text in, you essentially can check it out tonight. Check your local listings tonight. I think Sunday and Monday for the Memorial Day weekend.